Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, February 28, 2017. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Lottery Win. Sudden strong feeling resulted in $1 million win. This article is written by Marcus Jackson and is based out of Champaign. Hours after it was announced that he was the winner of a $1 million lottery jackpot, Scott Bulin's Facebook page was humming. Among the 40-plus messages posted to his wall, offers of financial advice, autograph requests, even one friend jokingly asking how many new cousins he had acquired along with his riches. No new family members yet, but I do have 40-some-odd new friends on Facebook, the Champaign Central High School graduate wrote back on Monday. Bulin, that's B-E-A-U-L-I-N, a 34-year-old Champaign construction worker, was at the counter purchasing a coffee at the Circle K at 2315 West Springfield Avenue, Champaign, when he noticed a $250 million cash spectacular ticket. I got this sudden strong feeling that I should buy one, so I did, the lifelong Champaign resident said, and then I scratched it and won $1 million. Bulin, who plans to use some of his winnings to buy a house, opted to receive his prize as a one-time payment of $600,000 less required holdings. He said he's an occasional lottery player and buys an instant ticket once or twice a month. The Circle K location receives a bonus of $10,000, 1% of the prize amount, for selling the winning ticket. A manager at the location on Monday declined comment other than to say, good for him. As for that advice, Bulin received about handling his finances on social media, he's already a step ahead. I also plan to make some wise investments, and I already have met with a financial advisor. The next headline reads, School Board Approves 4-Year Superintendent Contract. This article is written by Nicole LaFon and is based out of Champaign. Susan Zola is in line for a healthy pay raise when she becomes Champaign's new school superintendent on July 1st. Under a 4-year contract approved unanimously Monday night by the Unit 4 School Board, Zola will be paid an annual salary of $205,000. Her total compensation package is comparable to what retiring Superintendent Judy Wiegand makes. Before an annual increase, Zola was paid $150,796 in 2015-16, the most recent year the district provided employees' salary information to the Illinois State Board of Education. Zola will remain Unit 4's Assistant Superintendent for Achievement, Curriculum, and Instruction until Wiegand's departure. Other terms of the deal. Zola will receive the same percentage raise in salary next year as teachers who are off schedule. That would be 4%, according to the new collective bargaining agreement with the Champaign Teachers Union. She'll get 24 paid vacation days, 4 personal days a year, and the same amount of sick leave as Unit 4 teachers. She'll also be required to undergo a comprehensive medical examination no later than July 15th of each year, and she will participate in the same health, dental, and vision insurance programs provided to teachers and administrators. She'll receive a $350 monthly stipend for automobile expenses. And Zola will be evaluated by the board on or before June 1st of each year, according to the contract, which spells out her 4 main goals as superintendent. Those include, here are the 4 main goals. Make sure the district's facility upgrades align with the teaching mission of Unit 4 and are designed to promote student learning. 2, work to build an environment of high expectations for all students and focus on closing achievement gaps. 3, work to grow relationships with internal and external stakeholders. And 4, develop standards and evaluate programs that involve Unit 4 students but are run by organizations other than the school district. And now a follow-up to that article. School athletic fields will make major makeover amid renovations. This article is also written by Nicole LaFon and is based out of Champaign. By fall 2019, the Southside Elementary and McKinley Field campus will look a lot different than it does today. Not only will the construction of an addition to the school be in the works then, but the land surrounding Southside will be ready to debut a drastic makeover, part of $200 million plus, in renovations coming to Unit 4 facilities. What's out? The McKinley Baseball Diamond, the old football practice field, and the Tommy Stewart Fieldhouse. What's in? A turf JV and practice football field, circled by an all-weather track, a new outbuilding, complete with storage, lockers, and concessions, and another 150 parking spaces for track and football. The baseball diamonds will be relocated to fields at Spalding Park, and both the track and football situations will improve, giving the teams much needed space for their own practices and JV competitions. At least that's the hope. Varsity football games will still be played on Tommy Stewart Field at Centennial High School, and Central's track teams may still have to host larger competitions on the Centennial track, coaches say. Track remains up in the air, depending on whether the City of Champaign and residents of the neighborhood surrounding Southside agree on the installation of field lights. If they don't, invitational meets will have to be held at Centennial, which boys track coach R.G. Johnson, that's A-R-G-I-E, last name Johnson, said definitely isn't ideal, quote-unquote. "We haven't been told anything about the lights yet," Johnson said. "If we don't get them, we can still use the new space for dual meets and practice. That will work without the lights. But when it comes to those big invitationals, that's where the problem would be. We would need those lights at night," he said, adding some invitationals last until 10 p.m. "This new space will probably be just a practice facility if we don't get lights." Other than the lighting, Johnson is excited about the new track because practice won't be overcrowded, quote-unquote, like it is today. Currently, every track team in the district, there are 10 of them, including middle schoolers, uses the space at Centennial, which makes for some pretty tight scheduling windows. The track also gets worn down much quicker than it should, he said. Central football has similar frustrations about not having a practice and competition space to call its own, but assistant coach Matt Bryant says the program is, quote-unquote, flattered and thrilled by our community support. "We're excited about what's coming for McKinley," he said, adding his team is still holding on to the hope of having a competition turf to call home one day. "Our kids deserve that." And while Maroons, baseball coaches, and parents alike are less than thrilled about the move from their McKinley home to Spalding Park, head coach John Stab, or Stabe, I think that's Stabe, S-T-A-A-B, says the program will continue to be successful regardless of location. "The move still doesn't sit well with some people, but we're now all thinking, how do we make Spalding the best it can be for baseball and tennis," he said. His team won't officially start practicing at Spalding until the spring of 2019, 6 months before construction is due to wrap up at McKinley. In the meantime, Stabe and the Baseball Booster Club have been raising funds to make minor improvements to the now vacant Little League field at McKinley. They've budgeted about $1,500 to expand the bases by 30 feet and to install some old netting to keep balls out of the parking lot. Unit 4 has agreed to help pay to transport the field spoils away, he said. The idea is the new field will be used for extra practice space. Previously, the team used it for the football field or taking ground balls, but they'll now have enough space to practice everything, which will come in handy during spring tryouts. "The extra infield up there is going to help us a great deal in evaluating kids," Stabe said. And now let's look at our weather forecast provided by Greg Soulge, that's S-O-U-L-J-E, on the weather front. Today, the high will be 67, a shower and thunderstorm in spots before noon, more so in the afternoon, and gusty. Overnight, occasional showers and thunderstorms, gusty. Wednesday, the high will be 53, the low will be 49, cloudy and windy with showers at times. Overnight, decreasing cloudiness. Thursday, the high will be 47, the low will be 29, becoming partly sunny, an afternoon shower or two in spots. Friday, the high will be 43, the low will be 26, and sunny. Saturday, the high will be 54, the low will be 29, and it will be partly sunny. And now let's look at top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of editor Jim Rosso. That's R-O-S-S-O-W. Chuck Kaplinski has seen a thing or two in his many years as the News Gazette's movie critic. But Sunday's crazy finish at the Oscars rank at the top. "It has to be the most memorable ending I can recall," he said. "The only time I can remember such a shocking turn was when Crash was named Best Picture in 2005. Everyone thought Brokeback Mountain was a shoo-in, and that announcement was met with stunned silence. But as far as sheer shock and last-minute drama, this year's takes the cake. Our usual print deadline is 11 p.m., but we opted to hold on to include complete results. Good thing we didn't rush it. At 11:09 p.m., the Associated Press reported La La Land wins Best Picture Oscar. Assistant news editor Joel Leizer, L-E-I-Z-E-R, was finishing A1, but noticed a commotion on the big screen TV near his desk. At 11:15, AP moved, Moonlight wins Best Picture, after Oscars announced wrong winner. Leizer made the necessary changes that appeared in your morning newspaper. Online audience. What was trending last week at NewsGazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,241,830 page views? The three top stories: 1. Crash closes I-74 lanes near Danville. 2. Person dies in Champaign house fire. 3. MTD bus strikes U of I student in crosswalk. The top sports stories were: 1. Tate, Illini Hoops, has unique coach quandary. 2. Life remembered, Adam Jenkins. And 3. Tate, reason to high five. The three top videos were: 1. Clark Street fire in Champaign. 2. News Gazette Top 10 Boys Basketball Week 13, and 3. Illini Recap, what stood out for me was our defense. And the three top photo galleries online were: 1. Jeannie Brady, supporters at Thomas Hearing, 2. Polar Plunge 2017, and 3. On the Town, February 19, 2017, Dare to Dream, Dare to Build. In history, area history, in 1917, the first break in the list of candidates for nomination for mayor of Champaign came as Lee G. Van Wegen, that's V-A-N-W-E-G-E-N, withdrew from the race. That left five candidates to battle for the top two positions for mayor in the March 13th primary. In 1967, today, the University of Illinois began its centennial celebration free from the censure of the American Association of University Professors. The group informed the U of I that after 4 years, its censure had been lifted. The U of I was censured in 1963 following an investigation of its firing of biology instructor Leo Koch, K-O-C-H, in 1960 for his letter to the student newspaper, The Daily Illini, condoning free sex between consenting adults. In 2002, Champaign native Allison Krauss, who would be back in her hometown in March, took home 5 awards at the Grammy Awards. One was Album of the Year for the soundtrack to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And today's highlight in international history, on February 28, 1917, the Associated Press reported that the United States had obtained a diplomatic communication sent by German Foreign Minister Arthur Zimmermann to a German official in Mexico, the Zimmermann Note, which had been intercepted and decoded by Britain, proposed a German alliance with Mexico and Japan should the U.S. enter World War I. Outrage over the telegram helped propel America into the war. The next headline reads, University of Illinois Airport in Savoy. Willard lands United flights. Service to O'Hare to begin on June 8th. This article is written by Ben Zigderman and is based out of Savoy. Beginning in June, travelers will be able to go from Savoy to Maui, Hong Kong, Mexico City, and other international destinations with just one stop in between. 27 one-stop destinations not currently served at Willard Airport will be added on June 8th, when United Airlines begins offering flights to and from Chicago's O'Hare International Airport. The new United Express service will include 3 daily flights with a combined 150 daily seats, the airline said. Willard already has American Eagle, which has several flights daily to O'Hare and one to Dallas-Fort Worth. It's huge to have a second airline because people have points, airline miles, loyalties, and other reasons why they pick the airlines, and this gives us more options, said Craig Rost, executive director of the Champaign County Economic Development Corporation. 2 days before Monday's official announcement, tickets were already on sale for the United Express's flights in and out of the University of Illinois-owned airport in Savoy. United is the world's largest airline in terms of cities served, with flights to 360 cities on 5 continents. O'Hare, United's largest domestic hub, provides direct service to 208 destinations, 153 domestic, 55 international. Willard Executive Director Gene Cossey, C-O-S-S-E-Y, said adding United O'Hare's hub opens up new markets that were very difficult to get to before. Now it opens up everything, he said. The new flights to O'Hare are scheduled to align with United's main departure blocks to allow for easier connections, Cossey said. While Cossey said he's pleased with the new service, he'll continue pursuing new destinations. We're always talking with them about other destinations, he said. If this is extremely successful, then they will look at opening up a market probably. They'll look at the East Coast and the West Coast markets if this works really well for them, which we're very optimistic that it will be. Next stop, Washington. U of I Chancellor Robert Jones said the airport is still hoping to attract a third carrier and a nonstop flight to another destination, likely on the East Coast. It will probably take another year or two to get that done, but we remain committed to utilize and advance this asset to better serve the university and the university community, Jones told faculty senators on Monday. U of I faculty and administrators travel frequently to Washington, D.C., though all slots at Reagan National Airport are filled. Charlotte, North Carolina, a hub for American, has been floated as a possibility, as well as Newark, New Jersey. The new United service should help reduce the number of people who drive to Indianapolis or Chicago airports instead of using Willard, said Steve Carter, chair of the Willard Airport Advisory Board, which should in turn help Willard attract more flights. You look at how full the planes are leaving here. They're almost all 90, 95, 100% full, and so you think if we had more flights, people would use this airport more, Carter said. If it's successful, then we can show people that we have people buying tickets, so we think if you add another flight, you'll be successful as well. Willard was able to add United's service without any incentives or revenue guarantees, Cossey said. United is operating these all at their own risk, he said. There's no subsidies, no revenue guarantees, nothing like that involved. Willard, more visible. Willard still has a federal grant available, Carter said, but that can only be used to help it expand to a new destination. We couldn't have used that even if United had wanted it, Carter said. That's still out there to offer an airline that offers a different destination. In 2014, a Carter-chaired task force issued 14 recommendations to reboot the airport, including hiring an administrator, automated parking, adding new service, and rebranding the airport. Cossey was hired as a result of these recommendations, which Carter said helped land new flights. It's something the university had started doing, but didn't have one person responsible for, Carter said. One of the things Gene's been able to do as airport director is that he's had a regularly quarterly meeting with airlines and promoting additional service for our area. With the addition of United, renewed marketing efforts, and the recent opening of Einstein Brothers Bagels at the airport, Ross said the story of Willard is starting to change. I think it's more visible, he said. It looks to be more of a true story to people who live in the community. They see the buzz around it. The departure schedule for the new flights between Champaign-Urbana and Chicago is 5:45 a.m., 1:45 p.m., and 5:20 p.m. Arrivals from O'Hare are scheduled for 12:15 p.m., 3:50 p.m., and 8:55 p.m. And now let's take a minute to look at MJ's Minute, Marcus Jackson's weekly Q&A with the Mover and Shaker. This week, he's speaking with Mike Cation. That's C-A-T-I-O-N. You likely know him from his time as the public address announcer for Illinois men's basketball games for 8 seasons. But Mike Cation has moved on. The Urbana native and U of I graduate left his courtside seat at State Farm Center prior to the 2015-16 season to serve as a play-by-play announcer for the United States Tennis Association's Pro Circuit, calling Grand Slam matches earlier this year at the Australian Open. Cation, a former tennis player himself, stopped by the News Gazette recently to chat with our Marcus Jackson about his new career while looking back at the good times from his old one. To see the video of their entire conversation, please visit www.newsgazette.com. Here are the two questions for Mike Cation. One, are you ever starstruck working these big-time events? I walked into a room, there was a broadcast production meeting, and all of a sudden I'm seeing all these faces I know, legends in the industry like Fred Stoll, S-T-O-L-L-E, and the assignment I'm doing is Svetlana Kuznetsova, a 2-time Grand Slam champion on day one on one of the stadium courts. I wasn't quite prepared for it, but like I do every time, it's about doing your prep, getting to know styles, getting to know names, and once a serve is tossed, it's just tennis. What is your schedule like? I travel 16 or 17 weeks out of the year. When I'm on the road, it's nonstop tennis, 16 to 18-hour days. When I'm at home, I'm a single father. I drive Uber to take up some time, but it's a lot of tennis in the meantime. Downtime is different. If you'd like to join Marcus Jackson for a chat in our downtown offices, drop him a note on Twitter. His handle is MarcusJ_NG, or send him an email. His email address is mjackson, that's MJACKSON, at newsgazette.com. The next headline reads, Chicago Public Schools. District takes fight for funds to court. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. Chicago Public School officials on Monday said the nation's third-largest school system will end the academic year 3 weeks early if Illinois does not provide enough funds to close the deficit and provide teacher pension fund release. The school district has gone to court to accuse the state of creating separate and unequal systems for funding public education. They contend one is for Chicago, whose students are 90% non-white, and one for the rest of Illinois, which is predominantly white. The district filed a motion Monday in Cook County Circuit Court seeking a preliminary injunction barring the state from disbursing education funds until it adequately funds Chicago schools. Chicago Public Schools CEO Forrest Claypool said the June 1st closure is a worst-case scenario if a judge doesn't expedite the suit or if Governor Bruce Rauner and lawmakers don't act. "We will work to find any options to avoid a shortened school year," he said. In a letter to parents, Claypool said that in addition to the possibility of finishing the school year ahead of the scheduled end date of June 20th, summer school would be canceled for all but special education students. The nearly 400,000 student district recently instituted a spending freeze, program cuts, and furlough days because its roughly $5.4 billion budget was contingent on $215 million in pension relief from the state. The next headline reads, Piatt County Court, Mansfield Man's Murder Trial Rescheduled for July. Defense requests more time to review evidence. This article is written by Steve Hoffman and is based out of Monticello. The trial of a Mansfield man who faces murder charges in the 1990 death of his wife has been moved to July. At a status update in Piatt County Court, Monday, attorneys for Gregory J. Hauser, H-O-U-S-E-R, asked for the trial to be continued from its April 3rd start date. Defense attorney Kevin Sanborn said more time is needed to review evidence, noting that prosecutors have filed 18 discovery motions outlining what evidence could be used during the trial, which is slated to be held in the Piatt County Courthouse in Monticello. "We are also conducting our own investigation and need more time than has been given," Sanborn said Monday. Piatt County Assistant State's Attorney Elizabeth Dobson did not object to a defense motion to continue the trial, which Circuit Court Judge Carl, K-A-R-L-E, Koritz, K-O-R-I-T-Z, approved. The trial is now scheduled for July 3rd. Dobson did indicate, however, that she would object to 2 of 14 pieces of evidence that have been requested by Hauser's defense team. Those include materials from 2 cases, one a sexual assault case, the other a suicide, that she says are unrelated to the murder case. Those objections will likely be heard on May 30th. Hauser was charged last September 22nd with 4 counts of murder in the death of his then-wife, Cheryl, S-H-E-R-Y-L, Hauser, on October 4th or 5th, 1990, at their home in rural Mahomet. The trial was originally scheduled for last December. The next headline reads, My Entire World Changed. With the University of Illinois turning the big 150 today, we asked A-list alumni about the one campus town spot that made the biggest impression on them. Every Tuesday and one Sunday a month throughout 2017, managing editor Jeff D'Alessio will tell their tales. Today, the CEOs. 2 former Illini have went on to fame and fortune, met their first true love right here in CU. For Rosetta Stone CEO John Hass, H-A-S-S, who received a Bachelor's of Science in 88, it was a striking co-ed who asked him out on a first date, psychedelic furs in a smoky hall in 1986, he says, that eventually would lead to wedding bells. For infomercial king Ron Popeil, that's P-O-P-E-I-L, who attended the U of I in the early 50s, it was a dreamy spot unlike any other he had ever experienced. The fast food restaurant Steak and Shake, says the Beverly Hills-based Ronco CEO, who gave the world the Chop-O-Matic, the Showtime rotisserie and barbecue, the 5-in-1 turkey fryer, and his signature line, but wait, there's more. Pick an industry, any industry, and you're liable to find at least one UI CEO with fond memories of their college years. Here are just a few. For pioneering software entrepreneur Tom Siebel, that's S-I-E-B-E-L, he had a Bachelor of Arts in 75, an MBA in 83, and a Master's of Science in 85, the place is the Stacks in the main library. That's where I studied, says the Siebel Systems founder, number 309 on Forbes' most recent list of the 400 wealthiest Americans. His net worth is estimated at $2.5 billion. Immediately surrounded by 5 million volumes that approximated the sum of all human knowledge, you could get a visceral hint of what it must have felt like to be a polymath, like Thomas Jefferson or Benjamin Franklin, who had an immediate grasp of everything that was known. But Franklin and Jefferson had immediate recall in their minds. In the stacks, you might have to walk a few flights of stairs to get at it. For Seattle underwater photographer, filmmaker, and Women Divers Hall of Fame inductee Annie Crawley, who received a Bachelor's of Science in 1990, it's a black revolving door few knew existed in the basement of the communications building, the entry to the dark room where magic happened every day. The Dive Into Your Imagination CEO credits Professor Brian Johnson with helping her discover what turned out to be a lifelong passion. Because of the photojournalism program, my entire world changed. With a camera in hand, I became a storyteller of life, from capturing the homeless and soup kitchens to being on the sidelines, shooting quarterback Jeff George and the Flying Illini basketball team with the likes of Kendall Gill and Steve Bardo. And for Gertrude Hawk Chocolates CEO Bill Aubrey, A-U-B-R-E-Y, who received a Bachelor's of Science in 85 and an MBA in 89, it's the admissions office, which he reached out to a month into his freshman year at another university, realizing my dream was to be at the University of Illinois, quote unquote. When his first two letters on September 21st and October 25th, 1991, didn't produce the answers he was hoping for, I wrote a third time on November 4th and received a response 5 days later. The admissions officer was Miss Tamara Bouserman, B-O-U-S-E-R-M-A-N. She not only responded to me and did so promptly, she also set up an appointment for me on December 21st, 1981. I know all those dates because I saved the letters. I saved the letters from Ms. Bouserman, excuse me, it's B-O-U-S-E-M-A-N, my apologies, because I wanted to always have a reminder of how people should be treated. In the end, I was admitted in the next class. My education at the University of Illinois was simply excellent. My most important learning occurred even before I was a student. The next headline reads, Cerro Gordo School District, Occupational Math Class Approved. This article is written by Steve Hoffman and is based out of the Piatt County Journal-Republican. Cerro Gordo High School students will have another math class option beginning this fall. The school board approved the addition of occupational mathematics, which will reinforce general math skills and is aimed at students who opt to proceed more directly into the workforce. If a kid is going to become an electrician, he's going to be a pipe fitter or a plumber or a variety of things, this course may be more applicable than anything we currently offer to that kid, Superintendent Brett Robinson said. The two-semester class will be one of five that helps students meet the state minimum of 3 years of high school math. The reason I like it is we need trades, and you see that all the time now because we've gone through a period the last couple of decades that everyone has to be geared toward college, said School Board President Todd Henricks, H-E-N-R-I-C-K-S. Well, not everything is a college prep student, or not everyone is a college prep student, and we're running out of tradespeople. I've got friends that have job openings in Decatur, and they can't find service techs. The next headline reads, Homer Opera House, audition set for children's play. This is articles based out of Homer and written by Melissa Murley. The refurbished Homer Opera House will have auditions this weekend for the children's play Ozma of Oz, based on the third book in L. Frank Baum's Oz series. The auditions will be from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday, 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, and 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. on Monday. The play will be performed March 31st through April 8th. At least two adults and at least 20 youngsters from 4 to 5 years and older will be needed. Special consideration will be given to teens who own or are willing to use wheeled shoes to play wheelers in the play. The show will be directed by Robert Pinkelsimer, that's P-I-C-K-L-E-S-I-M-E-R, Pinkelsimer, I guess, with all rehearsals and shows at the Homer Opera House. No advance preparation is needed for the auditions. Children too young to read will be given other activities as a means to audition. For more information, visit homeroperahouse.com or you can call the following number, 217-688-2395. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been the reading of Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, February 28th, 2017. Happy 150th anniversary birthday to the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Thanks very much for listening. We'll resume shortly with part two of the News Gazette. Stay tuned and have a wonderful day.